morning and welcome back to your Hebrew Nation Morning Show, where Hebrews from all over the world gather to share and listen about the biblical roots of our faith. Sit back with your favorite morning brew and join the conversation. Lines are now open, so call 503-967-3001. 503-967-3001. Nation, His kingdom, His people, and your radio station.
Well, here we are at the second hour of this February 12th edition of The Remnant Road on Hebrew Nation Radio. This is Al McCarn along with Mike Clayton and Barry Phillips. Now, a couple of weeks ago, Mike suggested that we invite Teresa Bates to join us, and here she is all the way from Austin, Texas. And Mike, since it was your idea, please ask the first question.
Teresa, you've been around this walk for a number of years. You care to admit how many?
Well, I actually been walking Torah since 1986. Wow. And the Hebraic understanding came in about 1992.
Okay, and many people that are out there that have been around for a little while, probably they may not know you by name, but may know you as, oh, wow, she was the one that was teaching dance at that congregation or that conference. And she was the one with those banners. And she's the one that hit me upside the head with a banner.
No, I didn't hit anybody. That's not true.
Yeah, that's true. Because you are, there's a lot of these people that wave banners around that they scare me. Because they get too close and they got their eyes closed, but I really have never seen you hit anyone with a banner. So thank you for doing that.
Absolutely. You know, it's with the worship aspect has been one of the big passions that I've had, doing leading dance, flags, tambourines, all of that. And that carries over in so many different areas, but I learn and teach that if you get close to somebody and you hit them, you need to stop and make sure that they're okay, because they're more important than what you're doing.
There you go.
So,
and you know, that you just kind of did a segue there. I'm going to go ahead and lead with this. Teresa, as you're talking about worship, you're talking about respect. Worship is about respecting and showing honor to the Father. And you have been involved in something here recently that is really the ultimate in honoring someone. Honoring someone is when you give them something that they cannot give you anything back, that there's nothing possible that they can return unto you, I think is the greatest act of servanthood and honor of showing that you can show to a person. And you, through the last little while, I'm not sure exactly how long right now that I'm thinking about it, you have been going through a course on how to deal with death from a biblical, Hebraic, Jewish mindset. With that being said, take it away. Just give us, you know, wherever you want to go here.
Okay. Thanks, Mike. I've had the blessed opportunity to, let me back up a little bit. I have about 16 years of experience of working as a hospice caregiver, a CNA. I'm one of the people that go out and take care of the baths and personal care of people that are in many different stages of the dying process. And in that particular, in those moments, I've always pondered and have been praying about what happens after somebody dies. Because we, in our American culture anymore, we've been trained to, when they die, you call the funeral home comes, picks them up, and, you know, you make decisions, and then, you know, you have a funeral service. And I asked the Father about what happens in that time frame when somebody passes away. Mm-hmm. And that's been a prayer for quite a while. And about 6 years ago, I had the blessed opportunity of taking care of somebody that had died about 5 hours before, and prepared them in a funeral home. And that what I did was called a tahara. But jumping, I don't want to get ahead. And through that time, I realized that what I was doing for the person was preparing them to go from the physical into the spiritual, in a sense of making sure that they're clean and purified in that state. And there was such a touch of the Father that was there, because the lady I took care of could never give me anything back in return.
Yeah.
And that's called a true act of kindness, because I gave to her expecting nothing in return. So when I did that, again, I was praying, because I got just a taste of what I felt like has been missing. And Sukkot, about 3 years ago, I stepped into what we would consider the river, and made a phone call to an organization from the Gamaliel Institute. And Gamaliel Institute, they are a Jewish organization, the Reformed Jewish organization. And I talked to the executive director and explained kind of what I want to do. And they have very graciously allowed me to come in and learn on how to actually take care of people with a biblical mindset, but how to do it with honor, integrity, and respect. And I'm very honored to be the first non-Jewish person to graduate from their school.
Wow.
And it's a lot to carry, but the Father prepared my way.
Teresa, I'm not a fan personally of the American cultural experience that we go through in funerals. As a former pastor, seeing the family have to endure long lines of people trying to come by and quote unquote greet them and say words that may or may not make any impact to them, sit through sometimes a grueling hour-long funeral, quote-unquote, service, and then been taken to a graveyard and sit in front of an empty hole with their loved one and a casket sitting over top of that, and, you know, actually looking down in that hole and realizing that's where they're going to be deposited. That whole ordeal is like, if I survive the funeral, I will be able to somehow process my loss in the days, weeks, months to come.
Good insight.
With what you are describing, what is the positive impact on the family that is left behind, knowing that their loved one was treated somewhat differently than that whole cultural aspect of it?
Well, what I'm learning about is the community themselves are taking care of your loved one. You're not putting it off into a paid professional. And the family themselves don't take care of the washing aspect. But when if somebody were to pass away and you have a group of people that you know that are trained, you know that want to honor, respect the people, it builds a sense of community that can encompass around you. Because with what I've learned is called Chevra Kadisha, and it means holy society. And when you have a Chevra Kadisha in your community, you don't necessarily know who took care of your loved one, but you know that your loved one was cared for with honor, respect, and integrity. And when that particular process happens, and the person, because traditionally you're supposed to be buried within 24 hours.
Mm-hmm.
And that seems especially fast in our culture, but when you don't do any embalming and you have these systems set up, that part happens faster. But you have people that are around you that you don't have to have the big funeral services. You don't have to have the graveside, things like that. You get to choose a little bit more of what you want and how involved you want in this whole process.
Mm-hmm.
And you can choose to have a funeral service at home or not. That depends on each individual's what they want. But with having the fancy caskets and things like that, that's looked down upon because it's not needed. And when you get back to the basics of honoring people and not putting any undue burden, that really helps the people to be able to grieve the loss.
Mm-hmm.
And another aspect that we don't do in our culture that I've learned that I want to teach is when somebody passes away, in Jewish circles, they call it a shiva. And the mourner would, I don't want to say be confined to the home, their home, but they tend to stay in their home for 7 days. And shiva means seven. So when they're home for the 7 days, they are there and they have the full ability to actually mourn the loss of their loved one. Because what we want to do is we want to tell people that, oh, I know your loved one passed away. I'm sorry. Get on with life. Get over it. And when we as a culture do that, then we don't process through. And when I was listening to the people and the testimonies and the stories from the school of having this process, because you're allowed that time frame to mourn the loss of your loved one, we tend to have our feet underneath us. Our community supports around us to make sure that we're fed, make sure some systems are still in place, so that way you can mourn the loss and not look at it in a negative point, but just embrace it going, let them grieve.
Well, Teresa, this brings to mind my own experience when we laid to rest my father and my mother several years apart. And, even though we were spiritually prepared for this, the fact that we're getting to a funeral several days after they have passed, there's almost the sense of dread and the sense of, oh, we have to prepare this elaborate thing. We have to endure it. Just like you said, Mike and Barry, dealing with the visitation, the lines of people and all of this. But I see here in this Jewish practice something, turning it around. Within 24 hours, the body is properly and with dignity and honor and respect laid to rest. And then you can process and grieve. And I wish we had had that for my family. So I see I see here the importance of this. Can you just elaborate on that some more?
Well, it's when somebody has, when we take the time and put them in the ground, we can lay them to rest quickly because our mind wants to keep them alive, wants to keep them where we can visibly see them. Wow. And that's, I see that as a mind play that, just one last time, where we get wrapped up in the emotion. And when somebody, after somebody passes away, because there's no embalming, because there's no viewing, so to speak, and that's a whole different topic.
Yeah.
When we can allow them to be laid at rest quickly, it has that process that's not long and drawn out, so the people can put them at rest quicker. And we in society don't want to do that because we're still in the mindset of having that big party. And it's shifting back because if we're going back to the Remnant Road or going back to our ancient past, this is the way they did it 100 years ago and then some, because when you can put somebody in at rest that quickly, you're just able to, it doesn't mean it's not hard, but you're able to let go of that process much faster. Mm-hmm. And training or teaching the culture that that's not only acceptable, but honoring to the person that passed away. Because when we honor them, their life is gone, mm-hmm. and there's nothing we can do to bring it back. And when we do the open casket, we're trying to remember them that way, but that's not any longer looked upon of a respectful thing to the person that is that deceased.
Teresa,
does that make sense?
Go ahead, Barry.
Well, I told my wife, if anything should happen to me before the kingdom comes, I do not want my casket open and people filing by and gawking at my mm-hmm. dead body. Put me in the ground mm-hmm. as quickly as possible mm-hmm. and have mm-hmm. a memorial service. And I understand that there's a need of some sense of closure for the immediate family. You know, I can kind of understand that. But it kind of leads me to a question, and I've always wondered about this in Yochanan or John chapter 11, dealing with the death of Lazarus or Eleazar. I was always taught in Sunday school that the Jews believed that the spirit of the departed lingered in and around the body for 3 days, and on the fourth day actually left. And so when Martha said, well, you know, it's 4 days, he stinks by this time, that's actually what mm-hmm. she was talking about. You said a while ago something about preparing the body, washing the body and so forth, to make them clean and so forth for that transition. Is that based mm-hmm. on a similitude of thought there, in that there is a yes. lingering of the spirit around the body?
Yes. And I know a lot of people out there may have had the same similar situation where you're with somebody when they take their last breath.
Mm-hmm.
And you can't physically see, but you see when the spirit leaves the person. In Jewish tradition, the thought behind that is the soul hovers or stays around their body until they're buried, until about the 3 days, but when they're buried. And when you do the washing and cleansing the body, one of the terms that I'm learning is you're midwifing the soul, because wow. you clean the body, and then they call it a water ritual. I relate it to the same process when we do a mikveh or baptism in Christianity. And we don't technically would do a mikveh on somebody who's deceased. There are some funeral homes that have mikveh pools, but it would be really challenging to do a full immersion. Okay. So, after the person is completely washed, hair washed, fingernails done, cleaned, things like that, then you do a water pouring, which would represent a mikveh. So that way the person is going from a physical aspect to a spiritual one. And is there a proof that the spirit hovers? I don't see it, but in all honesty, Barry, I have felt it. Where one of the aspects that the Jewish community has taught me that I've absolutely have embraced is called Shemirah. And Shemirah is when somebody passes away, you have people that take shifts that sit with the body, or in the funeral home, usually the body is in the refrigerator, but you sit there so that person's not alone. So you're accompanying them in this transition period of time. And when I did a shift once, I've done several of them, but there was one time where during that shift, you pray for the family, you pray for the loss of that loved one, or you read Psalms. And when I was there in my shift, I was singing the Psalms, and I've never done that before in this practice. I've always read the Psalms, but I've never sang it. And I was, I don't want to say I was dancing around, but I had a, I was walking around, I had a spring in my step, I was singing the Psalms. And afterwards, the next person that took over the next shift happened to be the daughter. And what they told me about the deceased was they were a world-renowned composer, and they wrote songs to glorify God.
Wow.
Mm.
That's why I can understand the concept behind that it hovers until they're buried.
Wow.
It was just, there's so much to teach. There's so much here that I burst to share.
Wow.
So what I'm hearing, Teresa, and indeed this, there's so much to go into here. I'd never thought of it this way before. I know about the ministry to the family, those who have lost the loved one. I never thought mm-hmm. about the ministry to the one who has passed on mm-hmm. and the importance to that.
Right. Go ahead.
Yeah, I was just, please elaborate on that. We've just got a couple of minutes left till the break, but I think time to go into that.
Yeah, well, I'll try to speak fast. Generally, when throughout your lifetime, we want to be clean. We're cleaned at birth. We wash before marriages. We wash before graduation. We wash before all of the high points in our life. And with the final thing that is done to our physical body, that should still be held in high regard. The only difference is at this point, they can't do it for themselves. And that's why bringing up a team of people that not only are called to do it, but want to prepare them, because in that process of the washing, you're putting on priestly garments. You are praying the Psalms over them. You are, the Father has blessed you with the mind. They've given you hands that have done the work of reuniting the kingdom. And when that is done for them as a last physical thing, that's bringing them the honor and also showing them that you are thanking God for blessing this world with this person. And we are giving that person back to God, a clean, pure, unblemished person as we can possibly give.
Wow.
How amazing. Teresa, I've got a plan to catch. As you know, I apologize that I'm going to be off the out of the next segment. Guys, please ask the questions that I would have asked this thing about viewing, Barry. Teresa, I want to go ahead and offer an invitation. I think that Al and Barry would be in agreement on this. This hour is going to go by way too fast, and we need to have you back on possibly numerous times to talk about this. And Al, I want to make sure that people have an opportunity, that Teresa has a website that she has just developed and can come in and she can speak and talk about this and actually help people in this incredible time. And what she just said, you were doing something for someone that they cannot do for themselves.
Amen. Well, as we are up against the break, Teresa, can you give your website real quick?
It's peacefulpassages.net.
All right.
See you guys later.
See you, Mike.
Take care, Mike.
See that time.
Hey, welcome back to the Remnant Road for this 12th February 2018. This is Al McCarn along with Barry Phillips. And our special guest today is Teresa Bates of Peaceful Passages, and that's her website, peacefulpassages.net. We are talking about proper honors in death. I guess that's a good way to describe it, Teresa. looks like we have a caller, so let me welcome our caller. If you could give us your name and where you're calling from, and do you have a question for Teresa Bates?
Yes, this is Marty McHenry. I know Teresa well, and I just would like to ask Teresa, okay, I live in Reno, Nevada, and I would like to have this instituted for any one of my family loved ones, and of course, we don't know what day they're going to pass, so how do you get this all in place since it happens so quickly and it's so new? How do we put these new ideas into place in our community? Thank you, Teresa.
Well, hi, Marty. Well, hi. One of the things to do is to have these conversations early before the need arises. So you get the different systems put into place. You know who basically is going to do what. So if somebody is near the end of their life, that's when it tends to be a little bit easier, because you can have your advanced directives to say, okay, if this happens and this happens, then I want this system to come through. And if you have all of that stuff set up ahead of time, then when a death actually happens, then everything falls into place. It's much harder if you're somebody by yourself and you don't know the systems that are out there. And in the event of car accident or things like that, that still, if you already have your system set up ahead of time or you have your team, then generally what they would do is they know the person to call. And that's an advantage of somebody like myself. Those that know me in my territory, they know which funeral home that I would tend to go through. They would call me and I'd call the funeral home, and then things just happen so fast, and you have your people that you would call. I would call somebody that sets the shmira up, and then somebody that will help with the mourners, the people that have lost their loved ones. So that way both sides can be taken care of. But it's best if we have these communities set up ahead of time. And that's what I'm trying to promote for congregations and communities to do.
Yeah, and I that's very valid, because what do we do in the Messianic community if we want to have this instituted? Because apparently it's only our Jewish brothers and sisters that are doing something like this, but we want to have Yeshua very evident in all that's going on at this time of transition and passing. So that leaves me in the quandary of, okay, I see this is so important and I want it available if something should happen, but I don't know where to go to in my own community.
Right. Well, that's why you start talking about it and people with your own community. There are some of the Jewish people in our communities that have these systems set up. So if you're out there by yourself, then you can contact some of the funeral homes, because the one that I'm working through is not the Jewish funeral home of Austin, but there's other smaller funeral homes that know what the protocol is. They know about things like this. So you can individually set that up, but if you do that, then they're going to rely on you to bring in the people to do the cleaning.
Mm. Okay.
So, well, and this is the preparation that I'm wanting to, yeah, this is what I'm wanting to teach people on how to do for their own communities.
Okay. So in other words, I need to have a little conference in our community, have you come out and start talking to some people. It's just trying to figure out where do I start and who do I ask first.
Right. Right.
So thank you very much, Teresa. I'll continue to listen, but I'll get off the line.
Thank you for calling, Marty.
Yeah, bye-bye.
Okay,
yeah.
Teresa, I've got a thought here. A number of years ago, we had a lady in our congregation pass from cancer, and the family chose not to have her embalmed, and the ladies of our congregation went to the funeral home. They washed her. They put oils on her. They dressed her, and then they danced for her. And, awesome. You know, we were just winging it because we didn't know. There was no specific training. And it was a pure act of love on the part of the other ladies in our congregation for their sister that had passed. They did the best that they could, but I could tell that it was impacting, you know, and it was a bit uncomfortable, for them in that they were actually touching and you know, that close proximity to one dead outside right. of the normal funeral aspect of things. Ladies, I can see being more loving and nurturing, you know, because of that part of their character. How do you train men to do this for a brother? That, to me, that would just be more, I think men would see it as more awkward. And how do we get beyond this American mindset that men have to actually step in there and do this role?
Well, basically the training for performing the tahara, the washing of the body, is the same for the men and the women. There's people who are called to do it, and it's getting past ourselves to build up people to go that want to take care of the body, take care of their loved one. In general, you will find men that are willing to do this. You'll find women that are willing to do this. And with this kind of act of final act of kindness, the men will take care of the men. The women will take care of the women. But generally, there are more women that are willing to do this this process than the men. So the women can take care of the men if need be. But there's never allowed a man to take care of a woman.
Sure.
Because of gender respect and honoring that part of the person's life.
Well, this is a whole new world for me, and I'm sure for our listeners as well. Because as we said at the top of our visit with you, Teresa, usually here in the West, in America for sure, we relegate it to the professionals, to right. the funeral directors, the undertakers. But I can see in this a very important community building aspect.
Yes.
Yeah. It is something that causes the community to come together, or in fact, the community should have started to come together already to begin to think about these things.
Right. Well, one of the biggest blessings that I had, and the Father's taught me so much in the last 3 years, when I was attending school with my Jewish brothers and sisters, my biggest blessing that I learned was to be quiet, and I heard their heart for each other, because they're brother and sister. And when you're quiet and you start listening, you can hear that heartbeat. And with a lot of what I had learned, when we walk through life, somebody that is willing, like you, Al, you have a brother or a sister that come alongside in your deepest, darkest, hardest moments and walk you through it, don't you tend to hold on and value them a little bit more?
Absolutely.
So, right. So when we as a community start loving and caring for each other, we are so on board with birthing babies, and the whole community comes around and is all happy and excited. But we, again, as a society, when somebody dies, we try to push it off. We try to pretend it's not going to happen, or relegate it. Or if I talk about it, then it's going to happen. Well, the last I checked, we have 100% rate that technically we're all going to die. And when communities, instead of pushing that responsibility onto somebody else, getting back to our roots, so to speak, when we say, No, this is my loved one. This is my brother. This is my sister. Let us come around them. And the testimonies, again, that I heard when I was going through school is the community comes together. They don't care who they were, how they died, what kind of life they lived. That brother needs me to help care for them. And it strengthens the community much stronger because they have each other's back.
That's what I'm getting at. You're talking here about something that is common to us as human beings.
Yep.
We joke about there's only two things certain in life, death and taxes. Yeah, that's a joke, but let's get serious. Death happens. I was talking to a friend a couple of days ago who was able to minister to a cousin who very, very quickly had been diagnosed with stage 4 cancer and then was gone. And my friend said he was able to minister to his cousin in the last few days. And that was healing to him.
Yes.
You know, I heard more life and joy in his voice in that conversation than I have heard in a while. And this is another thing. We're not just ministering to those who have lost loved ones. We're not just ministering to the dead, but to ourselves as well. Right. Can you go into that a little bit?
Well, when we don't avoid death or talking to those that are dying, we tend to cut to the chase because that's when life really is the most real. We tend to say what we want to say. We tend to share and ask forgiveness, and very, very meaningful conversations happen at that particular point. There's times with myself, I lost my mom when I was 21, and I so wished I would have had a conversation with her. I wasn't afforded that opportunity, but that's what drives me so much to be with people in the hospice field, is to usher them and to bring peace into a situation, because most of the time, I would say 99.99% of the time, people who are dying have never been there and they're scared. And when you minister and you talk with them and even the family members, to show them and to bring peace to them in that situation, you ask them sometimes the harder questions, or get them to talk about things that were important to them, you find out more about the person. And that's what you can, those conversations, they call them like bedside conversations or imminent death conversations kind of things, where the truth of things start to come out. And when forgiveness can happen at that place, both parties can have peace. There's healing and restoration that can happen there, because if I needed to ask forgiveness from my mom and she granted it right before that last breath and said, "Teresa, I love you. You're forgiven." That is a powerful, powerful thing that can happen for all parties involved.
Teresa, I'm thinking about those who passed because they were a victim of violence, even a murder of that. So, going out of this life suddenly and violently, being taken from this world as opposed to slipping from it. You know, someone I know that they talk about, they people step across the veil. You know, they pass through the veil, if you will. Mm-hmm. And to me, that's just a whole easier understanding, much easier understanding than, you know, the body died, you know, and the spirits departed and that kind of thing. But to perform the ministry that you're describing for someone who's been a victim of violence, to me, that just changes the whole dynamic of their passing. It's almost like it rescues instead of them being remembered as how violently or tragically they died, the last memories is they were lovingly taken care of, and maybe the violence was stopped and they were enabled to be eased into that passing. Does that make sense?
Absolutely. And when you have the community in a violent death, it does impact greatly those that are doing the final washing, because before you go in, you have an understanding of who it is and what to expect. And when you can still perform those things and still pray over them or pray with them, and lovingly clean, it's you're asking for that restoration. You're asking for that peace. And if the spirit is hovering, they're hearing those final words of love, respect, honor being given to them for their life being stolen. And I will touch on a little bit where there are times in acts of violence or car accidents or terrorist things where you can't wash the body. And one of the key phrases that we have learned in the Hevra Kedisha is you do the best you can. Because if that person is so physically changed that they have to remain in a body bag, because that happens, you still perform, you can't clean them, but you perform the ritual washing over the bag. Sure. You lay the garments on top of the bag. Wow. Still, you do the best you can, but you still show honor and respect for the life that was given.
That's amazing. Wow.
I'm just listening to this and understanding, Teresa, how huge an affront it was in the Shoah, the Holocaust, to have those of our Jewish brethren to not have any opportunity to deal with the dead as they should be.
Yeah.
Right.
I'm also thinking of those that attended to the body of Messiah after he was taken off the tree. They were seeking to anoint his body with oils and wrap him and so forth. And then the words of Yeshua, who said, "Inasmuch as you've done it to the least of these, my brethren, you've done it unto me." So what I'm hearing you describe is that when these steps are taken for one who has departed us, it's an act of love not only to them and to the family, but also to Messiah.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Because we are one body. We are interconnected, all of our families and relationships, with no matter what nationality, we are still made in the image of God.
Right.
And when we show honor and respect for that image, not to idolize it, but to go, Father, thank you. Thank you for this life. Thank you for this creation. Thank you for the blessing of this person that you created at a time such as this. Thank you for the opportunity and the honor to care for this person for the last time while they are here on earth. I present to you my brother. I present to you my sister. And again, you can't, with the person that is deceased, they can never give you anything back. But
right.
when you do this process, it's like you feel the ruach so strong in the room, where you know the father is there saying, yes, this is how you care for your brother or your sister. You are showing them my love.
And I could see here, to carry that a little further, by showing such honor to God's creation, you show honor to Him.
Yes.
Wow.
Yeah.
So when we wash someone's feet, as Yochanan or John 13 describes, that Yeshua was loving them and washing them, showing them honor, and they didn't even realize perhaps what he was doing. you know, the church tradition that I came out of, that was an ordinance that was done at least a couple of times a year. We had what was called the foot washing. Men would separate right. from the women, and we would have such a ministry to each other. But it's, we need to find a way to wash one another while we still have people living with us, showing them the honor before they pass. I mean, you don't want to just wait till they're dead.
Right, right. And, you know, when we as a community start coming together to build teams to do this, that's one of the aspects that you are doing. I'm trying to build up a team because where I'm at, this is what I want for me. This is what I want for my sister. This is what I want for my brother. And when people come together and you start building the teams and wanting to start taking care of each other, that's one of the things that you can implement in, is having time set aside for meeting and trainings and things, and washing each other's feet or washing each other's hands, and start praying for each other. Because when you do these services, that will build such an intimate tie. Because what happens in the Tahara room generally stays there and with the team. It's not, you don't go out and go, oh, guess what I saw, you know, you don't do that, because that would be dishonoring.
Right.
We are out of time, Teresa. Could you give us your website one more time?
Yeah. It's peacefulpassages.net.
Peacefulpassages.net. And you are based in Austin, Texas, but I take it you will travel as people would like to hear.
Absolutely.
Okay.
Wherever the Father leads.
That does it for this edition of Remnant. On behalf of Mary Phillips and Mike Clayton, this is Al McCarn saying thanks for listening.